Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with bonkers.ie, Ireland's favourite comparison and switching website. Visit bonkers.ie today and start saving on your household bills.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
All right, Seamus O'Kelly's on the line from Lincolnshire in the UK. Hello, Seamus.
Hello there, how do you do?
Not too bad. And yourself?
I'm fine, thank you. Very well.
Dublin born.
I was Dublin born, yes.
Right, so are you an Irishman or an Englishman now?
Oh, definitely an Irishman. I'll always be an Irishman.
Good man, you don't lose it. Tell me about William Coote, who was your grandfather. Tell me and our listeners who don't know who he is and who he was, all about him.
Right, well, he was born in Dublin in 1890, and he's from a fairly big family, but his mother died in the year 1900, and the family was split up. He joined the Dublin Fusiliers first when he was 16, and then he joined an English regiment, the Connacht Rangers, who were an Irish regiment attached to the British. He served almost 21 years in there, but he was involved in the Connacht Rangers mutiny in India when the Irish soldiers downed their arms because of the atrocities that were happening in Ireland by the Black and Tans at the time.
Okay.
So they put down their arms, refused to fight. One of them was actually shot at firing squad, James Daly, and he was actually the last British soldier to be shot in peacetime. He was executed. Most of the other soldiers got sentences ranging from 1 year up to 15 years with their hard labour. My grandfather, William Coote, was sentenced to 1 year with hard labour, which he served most of the time in India. Now, when they were released, a lot of them went back to Ireland, but the English authorities at the time were keeping a close eye on them because of the IRA and so on. They didn't want these people coming back. They were trained soldiers from the First World War.
Yeah, who were now very upset about what had been happening back here by the Black and Tans.
That's correct, yes.
And so would have been seen as kind of very possibly anti-English as a result, yes. So,
well, the story was that one of the soldiers there said, we're doing the same thing in India, what the English are doing in Ireland. We're actually, you know, subduing the people of the country.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they were there for.
And remind me, you speak about James Daly there being made a real example of, but how many of these Irish men in the British Army fighting in India back in the early, the late teens, how many of them downed arms?
Well, initially, there was about 500 of them who joined because there was actually two camps.
Yes.
And they were set about 200 miles apart. And but after they set up committee and... I mean, the English army were trying to keep all this quiet because they didn't, because there was still a lot of rebellion going on with the Indians. And they didn't want news getting out that these soldiers were unarmed in the camp.
And from what you know in terms of how the mutiny actually manifested itself?
Well, it's because one of the soldiers, or maybe more, had been home on leave in Ireland, and all kinds of meetings in Ireland were banned. He'd actually gone to a hurling match, and the British Army come and disrupted this hurling match. They said it's still a crowd gathering.
Yeah.
They were told that they couldn't have the hurling match and so on because there was too many men together, basically.
Yes.
So, but now, funny enough, RTE did actually do a programme about this in 2006, and a chap by the name of Oliver Hawes, whose grandfather was one of the leaders of the mutiny.
Yes.
He'd done a programme for RTE where he actually went back to India and retraced the footsteps of the mutineers.
Okay, and Joe, the patriarch in this seat here, of course, as we know, has connections in that regard as well. But will you tell me about, as I said, what actually happened, as far as you know, when the news reached India of what the Black and Tans were at back here?
Well, is what they'd done. They went and downed their arms, and they handed themselves into the guard room. And at first, apparently it was quite a regular thing. If they'd had too much to drink the night before, they'd go and hand themselves into the guard room and have a day off. So the sergeant, when he seen these five fellas, initially there was five of them, he told them to get back and they wouldn't go back to their duties. And after they, more and more people joined, at one time there was 32 of them in the guard room. And they refused to parade, but they would still parade and take orders only off their own people, not off the British soldiers, if you know me, the British sergeants and commanders and so on.
This was their form of mutiny.
But they still got up every morning and, you know, got washed, shaved, dressed, and they would parade, but only on their own. They wouldn't. So a lot of the 500 men, when they had the meeting, they said, there's some long-time serving men in here, and there's people married with children. So if you want to go back to duty, there'll be no repercussion against you. And a lot of them did go back. And it ended up with 88 of them. 77 of them were actually court-martialed. And as I say, one of them was shot. Actually, two others got shot in... they tried to recover their arms from the arsenal, and they were fired upon, and two men got killed in that. Now, the worst of it was that after they got discharged, and my grandfather, as the British government say, he was discharged with ignominy, which meant that he had to forfeit the medals that he'd won in the war, and there was three medals that he'd won. My kind of argument is that it's 100 years this year, and in June this year it'll be 100 years, and these medals should be returned to all them soldiers. Because in 2006, the British government actually pardoned 306 First World War veterans who had been charged, who'd been shot at dawn for cowardice or desertion, and they were all pardoned. And I think these Connacht Rangers men should also be pardoned.
Sure. And they didn't run as such. They knew the consequences for laying down their arms in the name of the people, the oppressed back here in Ireland. So he knew what he was going to face, which it wasn't death by firing squad, but it was, you say, a year hard labour.
They were all actually threatened with death by firing squad, every one of them.
So he did his time there and then arrived back in Ireland. What sort of a life did he live after that, Seamus?
Well, when he arrived back in Ireland, although he was actually living in Kinsale, and he spent a lot of time away from home because at the time Kinsale still had English barracks there, and the house was raided many times. They'd come and kick the door in looking for him.
Yeah.
He wasn't actually in hiding. I mean, although people say he was on the run, he just didn't happen to be there, and they wouldn't believe it, of course. And of course, the thing was, because at that time, of course, Ireland was still under English rule, that he couldn't even get a job there because he was actually looked at as treason. But as it happened, the day that James Daly was shot was on the 2nd of November 1920, which was the day after Kevin Barry had been executed in Dublin.
Yes.
But of course, people all know the story of Kevin Barry and not so much about James Daly.
That's right. So, that was tough. But he came back and he made as best he could, you know, to try and get on with his life. He was a very disciplined sort of man, Seamus, it seems to me, from what I've read about him.
Yes,
despite
he was.
all the obstacles that were put in his place.
In 1922, he came back in 1921.
Yeah.
And in 1922, he actually joined the Irish Free State Army.
Right.
And, of course, he couldn't get a pension from the British government because he'd been court-martialed.
Yes.
So there was a lot of hardship there, and I say it was difficult for him to find work too.
Yes.
So they moved from his cell back to Dublin, where he got a job the Botanical Gardens. Mm. And he worked there basically from 1935 till his retirement in 1958, when he went back in sale again.
And he married and obviously had family. And you spent time, did you grow up living with him?
Of course, I knew my granddad all the time because I was born in Dublin, and I spent a lot of time because they only lived around the corner from us in Dublin until they moved back to Kinsale. But then we moved to England the following year, but we used to go back every year on holiday there and stay with them in Kinsale. Yeah.
Was he in a mixed marriage?
No. Well, he was initially. He was actually a Protestant. He was brought up a Protestant in Dublin, but he actually changed his religion in 1915 to marry my grandmother. They were a staunch Catholic family.
Right.
My grandmother was one of 13 children.
Where was she from?
She was born. They were from Kinsale. The whole family.
Oh, they were all Kinsale. Okay, but lived in Dublin, and that's where you were born.
Yeah.
And so you're. When did William die?
He died in 1973.
73.
But so when James Daly's remains were actually repatriated to Dublin, and two others, the other two men who were shot in the crossfire, they were all repatriated to Dublin in 1970. And my grandfather and four others of the remaining Connacht Rangers were at Dublin Airport to, form a guard of honour for those who come back.
How do you remember William Coote, your grandfather? He lived to 83 or thereabouts, so...
Yeah, he was a very, very quiet man, a very smart man. He'd always up early on the morning and he'd always have a shave every morning, and most days he'd shave again at dinner time. Always had a collar and tie. And he worked in the convent at Kinsale as a volunteer. He used to go and do a bit of gardening for them, paint the railings and all that type of thing, you know what I mean? But he never actually said a great deal about his experiences in the war. Apart from that, the Connacht Rangers were stationed in Kinsale when the Lusitania sank. And part of their job was to recover the bodies from the sea and to bury a lot of people.
He was a very self-respecting man who came back from very distressing times, obviously, as a young soldier. Yes. And as you say there, he never really talked about it. Do you think that it impacted on him in any way? Or he lived till he was 83.
He had a great resentment because his youngest son, in the early 50s, he actually joined the RAF. And my grandfather was most put out by that he'd actually joined an English regiment, to speak. Although he was very proud of being a Connacht Ranger, my grandfather, and he served almost 15 years with the regiment.
And when we talk about, great heroes, and especially around these times in the 100th anniversary of the uprising and the Civil War and the foundation of the state and all of that, and there are lots of names that you mentioned, Kevin Barry, and we can list them all off that we learned about. Did he ever feel that he didn't get the recognition he deserved for putting his life on the line over in India on behalf of Ireland? Did he ever have any resentment or bitterness towards the Irish?
He was proud of the regiment.
Yeah.
And he was proud of being a soldier. And he was one of them people, although he did have a lot to lose because he had 14 years service at the time of the mutiny. Well, almost 14 years. So he had a lot to lose with his pension and everything. But he was one of those that he'd stand by his comrades, no matter what. And as I say, he'd also done two tours in France in 1914. And then again, he was there in 1917. But he was sent back home because he was a long-serving soldier. He was sent back to Ireland to train new recruits in Galway.
Danny Tiernan's on the line in Roscommon, 51551. Danny, good afternoon to you. You're listening there to Seamus, and it's something of great interest to you.
It is, yeah. I studied the mutiny for years. I went through the guys that were court-martialed, that were sentenced to death, and the other guys that just got jail sentences and that. And the way they were treated after. And just to say that there's a ceremony in Tubbercurry this year in June to commemorate the guys that were involved in the mutiny. Mm. And we're trying to track down all family members of mutineers.
So what name did this mutiny have? Or is it all mutiny? Was it this specific one in India?
Yeah, it was just known as the Mutiny of the Connacht Rangers, or the Connacht Rangers Mutiny.
Right. The Mutiny of the Connacht Rangers, right.
Yeah, June 1920.
Yeah. Seamus, do you know Danny, or have you come across each other?
No, I don't know Danny, but I do know about the memorial that's going to be unveiled in Tubbercurry. I'm actually in touch with one of the other members of the committee there.
Yeah, Mary Henry.
I'm coming to Ireland for that in June, and the rest of my family are going to be there too.
Great. And Danny, why are you so interested in this?
I have a military background. My grandfather joined the Connacht Rangers in 1887.
Right.
And served in the Boer War and the Great War, was in India, and he was with the 1st Battalion, even though he wasn't with C Company. But there was a lot of people from Boyle involved in the 1st Battalion, like the regimental sergeant, Major, was Moran from Boyle. The sergeant that met Hawes, Gogarty and Lally when they were going down to the guard room to hand themselves in on morning one was Sergeant Morahan. Mm. And he tried to persuade them to turn back, that the role they were taking was the incorrect role. and William Daly was with them. That's James Daly's brother. Now, then there was about 30 of them up in Solan, which is up in the hills, which is now a part of Pakistan. They were up there on the Afghan border. And when the guys in Jalandhar mutinied, they sent two, Keenan and Kelly, they sent them up to Solan to tell the boys up there that there was a mutiny. But when Keenan and Kelly got there, the story had got wings and got legs, and it had been exaggerated in every way. And it turned out that they told them all of the Irish soldiers in the British Army were mutinying for... they didn't say mutiny. They said laying down their arms and not serving for a king or country because of the way the Irish were being treated in Ireland.
Okay.
But that technically wasn't true.
Right.
Because the mutiny in Jalandhar was over before Keenan and Kelly actually reached Solan.
But any Irish mutineers around that time, it was specifically, the reason was because of the black and tans and what they were, the way they were plundering Ireland, or were there other reasons?
Not basically because the black and tans, just because the way the British Army were treating
in general,
because the black and tans had only just barely arrived,
at that stage, 1920, as you said, and then very interesting stuff. Seamus, so your grandfather William Coote, his medals have been, obviously they're somewhere, and you want them, and you feel that they should be released by the British.
Well, I've been in touch with the MOD here, and they're saying that the medals were actually destroyed.
Because it would be. That would be part of the thing.
Well, they're saying that because he...
Because
he was charged with ignominy, and he didn't get the opportunity... If he'd have served another 3 years after he was after he'd been released from prison, if he'd have served 3 to 5 years, then they could have kept medals.
So what are you...
He didn't get the opportunity to do that.
OK, so what are you asking for from the Ministry of Defence then?
I'm hoping that they'll get some kind of pardon, if you want to call it that, and also that the medals will either be returned or reissued.
Okay.
It's not only my grandfather, there's a lot of other people involved as well.
Yeah.
I'm a bit of a footnote to that. When the mutiny started, some of the lads in the camp went down to the local bazaar and bought some silk and actually made a tricolour flag.
Okay.
And raised on the... They took down the Union Jack and raised their own flag. And that's the first time that the tricolour was ever raised on foreign shores.
OK, well, I don't know whether you're aware of this or not, Seamus, but the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge are here in Ireland on a diplomatic mission. They're on a visit, but it's a diplomatic mission. It's finishing today. They're actually in Connacht. They're in Galway.
That was the headquarters of the Connacht Rangers at the time.
So maybe if they're listening, it might be a nice farewell after being treated so royally over the last 3 days in this country that they might put in a word in the Ministry of Defence. I know I'm sounding glib, but there could be some diplomat listening, and wouldn't it be a nice thing maybe at this point in time to look into it on the day that William and Kate leave these shores, on the day that they visit Galway, on the week that they visited the Garden of Remembrance and laid a wreath there. And
I'd also like to say that it wasn't me who contacted your radio programme.
It was J.J. Hurley,
lives in Cork, J.J. Hurley.
Yeah, we were delighted then to be put in touch with yourself to tell us the story.
He's also fighting, making a campaign, to try and... Because although he didn't know my grandfather, he lives not far from Kinsale, and he knows a lot of people who knew my grandfather. And relatives, I've still got a lot of cousins in Ireland and so on.
Okay.
So it was actually JJ who set the ball rolling in as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for telling us and putting William Coote's name out there and reminding us of that mutiny and the reasons behind it. And Danny, Danny.
Can we ask anybody that knows any members or family members of people that mutinied to make contact with us?
All right, with the Connacht Rangers.
Danny, can I ask you, do you know of Oliver Hawes in Cork?
Oliver Hawes is coming up. I've been talking to Oliver, and his brother and family are coming up.
Great.
Okay, that's fine.
Well, Joe will be delighted to continue with this conversation because his deep and profound interest in Irish history, particularly around that time, and I think it's something he'd be delighted to come back to and try and make sure that that event on the 27th of June in Tobercurry in County Sligo is well attended. So, Danny, thank you. Keep up the good work. Seamus, a pleasure speaking to you.
And thank you very much for
anybody that's listening that wants to find...
Can you put Seamus in contact with me, please. We will. Give us my number.
We will, surely. Please. No problem at all. Seamus will be happy to do that, I'm sure. And we'll put more details up on our Twitter account. And indeed, if anybody's listening that has a connection, as Danny has asked us there, do get in touch with us, joe@rte.ie. Thanks, lads.